Welcome to the Road Back to Life with Ashley and Dawn, a program brought to you by patients for patients with kidney disease and their families. Hosted by the Road Back to Life, a mentoring group for kidney patients. Now here's your hosts, Ashley and Dawn.
Welcome everybody to the Ashley and Dawn Show. I'm Dawn. And today we're going to ask Ashley questions. Questions that are about stuff that women in the kidney community have asked. And so we're going to try to answer some of those questions. And Ashley, hello.
Hello.
Looking fabulous today. Fabulous.
Thank you.
And our engineer is in the back there. That's Bob. We kind of keep him in the dark, okay? So, Ashley, let's just kind of get right into this. People have asked about hair loss. And a lot of women talk about hair loss or excessive hair growth after transplant. Is this something you experienced, and how did that affect you?
Yes, hair loss was something that I experienced, and it's not something that nobody warned me about it. So it started on dialysis for me. I remember actually getting up from the dialysis chair, and there was a good amount of hair that I would leave in the chair. And I remember asking my doctors, and they were like, well, it could be stress, dialysis, could be a lot of different things. And at the time I had very long, thick hair. So being a woman and just being who I am, my hair was definitely a part of my identity. I'd had long hair, long, thick hair my whole life. So when it started falling out, I was a little bit worried, I will say. And so it started on dialysis after transplant, because I was on dialysis for about, I started in June, and then I was transplanted the following March. It continued, and a lot of women experience hair loss after transplant if it doesn't start on dialysis. And I lost most of my hair, I will say. It was thin, very, very thin. I cut it really, really short. And my doctors, my transplant nephrologist said it has a lot to do with medication. I took a few different supplements to help with hair growth, like biotin. It was everything that my transplant team said that I could take. So everything was safe, because you got to check with them first, obviously. I don't know if it helped, if I'm being honest. I don't know if any of the supplements helped. I did notice that my hair regrowth, I would get a lot of hair like once a year, which is kind of a weird thing to say, but I'd have short little hairs all over my head that were kind of poking through my long hair. And it was always in June, I was getting new hair. I'm almost 5 years post-transplant. I still have hair growing back. Most of my hair is back now, thick like it was before. But it took some time, and it was challenging. And I see it all the time on kidney groups, women just saying, I'm losing my hair. Is this normal? It's coming out in clumps. I see it in the shower. And it can be a little bit scary, I will say. But mine came back. It comes back. Mine definitely came back. It came back like it was before. And then with hair growth, some women experience excessive hair growth after transplant, is what I've heard. That was not something that I dealt with, but some women start growing facial hair from like the different medications. And so that can kind of be weird and confusing too. So hair loss, hair growth, you might have to deal with one of them, but, and it's just kind of a weird time anyway after transplant. So, if I can say anything, it's that it's going to come back. You just got to give it some time.
Yeah. I noticed, they gave me, a prenatal vitamin to make sure I got to all the correct vitamins. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what was in that stuff, but I swear, you could rub it in dirt and it'd grow hair. my fingernails grew really, really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it just was a lot of little stuff like that that I noticed. So I'm not saying it happens for everybody, but emotionally, how did that affect you, Ashley? I mean, did the hair loss and that?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're dealing with, or I was dealing with, a lot of emotions post-transplant. Steroids. I was new to being on steroids. So I had to, you know, my body had to adjust to that. You just received your transplant. You're trying to kind of get used to medications, some other things that are going on. And then to also be losing my hair on top of that, I just kind of felt like I wasn't me. Like I was kind of in this body that I didn't recognize. I was looking at this person I didn't recognize. And honestly, me losing my hair was scary. I didn't know when it was going to stop. I didn't know if it was going to stop. I just remember it did stop falling out. But it was very, very thin. And, I know that some women actually wear like wigs after transplant, if they lose a lot of their hair, just to feel, you know, a little bit more self-confident, which was actually something I didn't lose. I wasn't bald. I just had really thin hair, but I do remember like looking at wigs because I just wasn't used to this new person that I was seeing. About a year and a half after, that's when my hair started coming back. And now when I look back, I mean, being almost 5 years post-transplant, absolutely. I would go bald to get a transplant. In the moment, I was not happy about it. Just with everything else, it was just something else I had to deal with. But to look at where I am now in my life, and I feel so great and amazing and healthy, I'm doing all the things that I love, I would definitely take hair loss to get a transplant. It was 100% worth it.
Well, I didn't ask that question, but it's nice to know. I mean, I've known you, Ashley, for what, a little over 2 years,
yeah.
I think. And that's all I've ever seen you is put the long, pretty hair. You are.
Yeah.
Well, the next question that gets asked a lot is weight gain and or weight loss. Weight is sometimes that thing that can fluctuate with kidney patients, depending on what stage they're in. Was weight gain after transplant a problem for you? Was this something that impacted your self-image? Did you ever experience what is known as moon face from the steroids you take? We kind of chuckle at this because we know this and we mm-hmm. see this and we've experienced some form of it. But how did it affect you, the weight loss or weight gain or whatever?
Yes. So weight gain, moon face, and my hair falling out, it definitely affected me. So I was about 15 pounds heavier from the moment I checked in for my transplant to 3 days later when I checked out. And it was fluid and a couple different things going on, but my, the clothes that I came in were not fitting when I left. So being a woman, you know, gaining 15 pounds in 3 days, I was a little worried. I didn't really understand what was going on. I made them stop weighing me because they were weighing me constantly. And I said, I'm not standing on your scale anymore. I don't want to see how much weight I've gained in the last 4 hours. So, but in general, I gained about 20 pounds in 6 months, which was a lot. I had never been on steroids before. They made me very hungry. When I used to joke, I would be eating food, thinking about what my next meal would be. And that was weird for me because I am one of those people that I can skip lunch because I'm too busy. Like, I'm just like, oh shoot, I forgot to eat today. That is kind of like the way the person that I am. can run off coffee kind of a person. So to be in this body, all I'm thinking about is food. All I want to do is eat, gaining weight pretty quickly, and all my hair is falling out. I did not know who I was. So, and then I had moon face, which is just a fancy word for your face being kind of round and puffy from the steroids. I also didn't think that I had moon face. I was like, I'm the lucky one. I don't have to experience this. And now that I look back at pictures, oh yeah, I definitely had it. Like, I just looked puffy, big puffy face. Like, but I mean, I guess in the moment, it's good I didn't notice. At least I wasn't telling anybody. They would have been like, I think you do have it. But anyway, my transplant team, they weren't concerned about the weight gain. So I was about like 130 pounds when I got my transplant. I got up to about like 150, 155. They didn't want me to gain more weight, but they did expect for me to gain weight with the medication. I remember drinking glasses of milk because I just needed something sweet and I didn't feel bad about drinking milk. I don't know. It was just the weirdest. It was just the weirdest thing. But being a woman and like, obviously, like, I mean, self-image is important to a lot of people, you know, and so I just felt like I was in someone else's body. I had to go buy larger clothes because my clothes didn't fit. I finally had to just say, okay, fine. I will get larger pants because my pants don't fit. I cut my hair super short because it was really thin and I was eating all the time. I literally remember looking in the mirror and not even recognizing that person and being very self-conscious and having no confidence at all because I didn't know how to handle what I was seeing, what was happening, what I was going through. And it affected me. It definitely affected me emotionally. And I dealt with some depression because of it. But things got better. Things definitely got better. And it was all just an adjustment that I had to go through.
About how long did it take before things started turning around for you? Was it that you think your body got used to the steroids and the different things, or was it more of a mental thing for you where you knew you had to turn something around and you found a way to do it?
I think it was both. So I would say 1 year post-transplant, I was definitely heading in a better direction. So emotionally, I think that I had started to, you know, accept everything that was going on, and trying to be better because of it. You know, my hair had fallen out. We're just going to keep moving forward. I have gained this weight, but that's okay. You know, I'm going to eat healthier. I'm going to do what I have to do to kind of, you know, get back into that body that I once knew. So about a year, and it took about a year too with the medications to kind of like settle down and get used to everything. I remember prednisone made me super, super sweaty all the time. Constantly. I'd be sweeping my kitchen, sweating. Dripping sweat. And I'm not like that anymore. So it definitely, my body just kind of had to get used to everything and know that this is a new way of life. My appetite is definitely not like it was before. So I'm basically back to where I was, pretty normal appetite. So I've lost weight since, you know, I was 155 pounds. And I'm also happy, you know, you emotionally, once you kind of get that under control, I'm happy with where I'm at. And I also don't get hung up on some of the small stuff because, you know, I've dealt with worse. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, it's kind of a funny thing when we talk about steroids. I've got two brothers who've been transplanted and myself. I don't have any sisters. Mm-hmm. They had steroids. I didn't, but what I did have kind of was like steroids to a certain degree. And you find yourself doing things that you don't know why you're doing them.
Yep.
You know? Yep. It's kind of like the crazies going on in your head, and you can't even, mm-hmm. You can't even imagine what some of the process is till you go through it. And all of a sudden, you know, you go, why am I doing this? You know, it's good. And it's not necessarily about eating, you know, it's, mm-hmm. but it's one of those necessary things that we need to take so our kidneys don't reject.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're going to go on to another subject, which I personally thought would be really, really impactful on the women out there that are either doing dialysis or have had a transplant, and that's scars. You know, scars tell stories sometimes. Scars leave reminders sometimes. And so, you know, most kidney patients have them. We've had surgery to get our fistula put in, to have our peritoneal access put in. And if we got caught too late, we end up in the emergency room, and then they have to operate to put in these temporary catheters in our neck. So, I mean, that's kind of how life starts for a kidney patient. And then to go from there, and that's oftentimes minor outpatient stuff, to go from there to transplant, you're going to find some more scars. And it's not like, to me, it's not like some of them are visible and some of them aren't. And some of the treatment's visible and some of it isn't so much. So I know that you've had your bout in dialysis and with transplant. How did the scars affect you personally?
So the scars don't affect me like they do a lot of other women. So I know that a lot of women, they feel self-conscious about the scars that they have from different surgeries and different procedures that they've had. If I don't see it all the time, it's not something that I pay attention to. I have quite a few scars up on my chest because I had a neck catheter. I have another scar from skin cancer on my chest. I have scars on my stomach from peritoneal dialysis and having that placed. I obviously have my transplant scar. I have scars on my arm from when they had to put a graft for dialysis. I have scars on my face from skin cancer. So on my forehead, above my lip. So I have a lot of scars. I have a lot of scars. It was never anything that I personally got hung up on. My second scar on my face for skin cancer on my forehead, I was over having scars on my face at that point. I didn't want another one. But also, I don't know. It's not something I focus on. I never think about it unless someone asks me about it. I can say the only people who do ask me are typically men, which is weird, but they'll say, hey, what's that scar on your forehead? And I'm like, thanks for asking, but it was skin cancer. It's kind of like that general rule. Don't ask a woman when she's due if you're not sure if she's pregnant. Like, I don't know. Just a tip for men in general. If a woman has a big scar across her forehead, you don't have to ask her about it. They probably don't feel great about it, but I'd rather someone ask than stare. So I will go there. I don't mind my scars. I don't. And I see a lot of women who do. They do. They hate them. It reminds them of specific things. They can see them. They wish that they weren't visible. But my scars, I mean, they kind of remind me of where I've been and where I am now. And I'm so incredibly happy and grateful where I am in my life, that it's just, they're just a part of who I am. I'm also happily married, so my husband doesn't care that I have scars. So that's another thing too. But yeah, my scars are, they're not a big deal to me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, if it was a guy that asked a guy how he got that scar on his forehead, he'd probably tell him it was a bar fight.
Oh yeah, it's cool. Look at my cool scar. Yeah, it's always men. Always. Why do you have a scar on your forehead? And then I say skin cancer, and then they usually feel really bad. And I don't want them to feel bad, but they're usually like, "Oh, I'm so sorry." I'm like, what did you expect me to say? So.
Yeah, I'm not a human dartboard.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's weird how people are. You know, I asked a guy, it was on dialysis, him and I were pretty close, and he had lost his leg, and he had lost it to cancer, which I came to find out. And he goes, "How'd you lose your leg?" He said, "I fell out of the boat and an alligator took it off."
Oh.
I go, "Really?" He just starts laughing. He says, "You know how many people ask me about how I lost my leg?" He says, "I just got to make up a good story."
Yeah. Might as well.
So there is some things that the doctors have done to try to make it less impactful for women. And I know, because my daughter gave me my kidney. And when they removed her kidney, they did a bikini type surgery, which is lower down on the abdomen, I guess. I don't know. I don't wear bikinis.
Yeah.
In a few, you know. And the same thing when they put them in. And so, you know, they do the best they can. But the important part is they need access where you live. And if it leaves a scar, they do the best they can. If it does, it does.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody's hung up on your scar, well, it's pretty shallow, I think. I don't know.
I think so.
That's just me talking. I probably get hate mail for this one. At least I get mail, huh?
Yeah.
So another question is asked, is the surgeries? You know, since we're on the topic of scars and stuff, I know you've had both a neck catheter and a graft, is, you know, for dialysis, the PD catheter, and both can make it difficult to shower and bathe. And how were you able to make this work for you? Because I know it seems like there's a lot of women who try to keep, you know, their daily routine up just so they feel normal.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is washing their hair and taking a daily shower or wherever. And guys do the same thing too. I remember after I had my transplant, I had my wife get a box of Saran wrap. And I held one in and she walked around me. I sucked it in and she put that on tight. I had to get a shower.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't get anything wet.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you handle it?
It was an adjustment. When I had my PD catheter put in, I couldn't get it wet. And that is, it was mid abdomen areas where it was hanging out in the beginning anyway, when it was healing. So.
Wait. Explain what was hanging out. Because people are listening that don't know what a PD catheter is.
Yeah.
And how all that, you know, can impact your life.
Yeah. So it was basically like a flexible tube that was sticking out, I would say belly button height, but more over to my right, with almost like a little plastic cap at the end. So that's where I would hook up to do peritoneal dialysis. So I would just I know it's kind of weird with a tube hanging out of your abdomen, and it was going into my peritoneum. So, and that's where I would put the fluid for dialysis. I just put mine in my pocket, which is a weird thing to say, but, so I had a little hose hanging from my abdomen, and just the it was like 3 inches at the bottom, which was like a hard plastic cap. I would just put it in my pocket of my pants. So that's how I, and sometimes I would look and it'd be hanging out of the bottom of my shirt, and I just put it back in my pocket. But, and you would tape it. So you would, so that if it would tug on something, it wasn't tugging where it was exiting your abdomen. It would tug where it was taped to your skin, if that makes sense. But when it's healed and everything, you can shower. You can shower, you can do those things. But in the beginning, I couldn't. And so I remember just sitting in like 3 inches of water. That's how I would take a shower. And then I had long hair, thick hair at that time. And so I would bathe and wash my hair on separate days because it was just such an ordeal. So I would bathe in my 2 inches of water on some days. And then the next day I would stick my head over the bathtub with my detachable shower head and wash my hair because I couldn't, it's hard to not get your abdomen area wet. It's like, it's just a weird spot. And so it was challenging. I actually completely forgot about that whole period of my life before we started talking about this show. Cause you know, women, you have to shave your legs and there's just a lot of grooming that happens. And so it's just annoying when it's already a process, but just to make it longer. It sucked. And then I think I got one shower in. My peritoneal dialysis catheter healed and they're like, you can shower. And I was like, this is the best day of my life. I get a shower. And then I had to switch to hemo. So they had to take out the catheter, the peritoneal dialysis catheter, put a graft in my arm and then put a neck catheter, and you cannot get your neck catheter wet. So I got one shower and then they were like, no more showers. And I thought I was never going to be able to shower again in my entire life. That's how it felt. So I was back to my bathing in 2 inches of water and washing my hair over the bathtub. So, you take them for granted. I take showers for granted right now. You just don't even think about it until someone takes it away from you. And then your whole routine ends up being twice as long. So I adjusted. I made it work. A lot of people do a lot of different things. They kind of, like you were saying, like wrap it in plastic. And there's these patches that you can tape that seal on all sides, and you can tape them to your skin. My neck catheter was only in for, I guess, like 2 months. I'm not skilled enough to not get it wet. So I never showered. I didn't even want to try. If I had it longer, I probably would have tried different methods so I could actually shower, but I just waited until it was removed. And then I was back to normal showers because I just had a graft in my arm for dialysis, but, yeah, it sucked. And yeah, it sucked.
And just for those out there that are listening that don't know, a neck catheter is generally placed as a temporary thing to so they can get a peritoneal catheter put in or a fistula or a graft or something so you can be hemodialysis. So and the scary part of that is it's so close to the heart and whatnot. The reason you don't want it to get wet is that infection comes through there. And it comes through there and it travels a short distance. Bingo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so about, I want to say, you know, less than 10% of the population out there that's on dialysis has to have a neck catheter. The rest of us don't. And if you see somebody out there that's got a neck catheter and he or she has had it in their neck for a long time, it's because they choose to and they don't want to get a fistula or peritoneal. To that I say, don't be one of those. It's a high ticking time bomb. It will happen. You will get an infection and you'll be sick.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you get to return to fight another day.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us don't.
Yeah.
So be careful with that stuff. Peritoneal is very, very touchy too. You need to make sure you're really clean with peritoneal. Same kind of thing, only it doesn't go to your heart. It goes into your abdomen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so anyway, having said all of that, you know, you and I talked about this once. I imagine for a lot of women who, I would imagine from a young girl to you know, adulthood has thought about having kids. And kidney failure can sometimes put a big kink in it. And you know, you have to look at, sit down with your husband and or significant other and figure out, how do we do this? And so did you sit down with your husband and talk about making a family? And if so, how did that go?
Yeah, so I was diagnosed at 15. And so before, you know, any kids or anything like that. It was brought up a lot. It was brought up a lot with my nephrologist. It was something that they kind of kept in the back of my mind. Because if you want to have a family, if you want to have kids, they highly suggest that you plan so everybody can kind of help you with that so that you can be safe about it. And so I remember when I was about 23, my kidney function was, you know, in the 20s, about 25%, between 20 and 25%. And my nephrologist at the time said, if you want kids, you should think about doing it now, because this could put you into kidney failure. But, you know, now is a good time, because, I mean, I was all, my kidney failure was only decreasing. My kidney function was only decreasing. So my husband and I talked about it. And if I'm being completely honest, I don't know where that conversation went, but we didn't have kids. So I think we just decided to wait. And then when I was about 20, so I was transplanted when I was 29. So I was on the list at 25. So at about 25, I was being worked up to be on the transplant list at the University of Washington. And, you know, this was part of the questions. Do you think if you get a transplant, will you want kids? Is this something that you see in your future? And my husband and I said, yes. And they said again, you know, if you want kids, you should do it now. And I was under 20% function at this point, hadn't started dialysis, but was less than 20%. I then went through genetic testing because I was diagnosed with urate nephropathy, which is basically high uric acid that damaged my kidneys to the point where, you know, I was in chronic kidney failure. But the University of Washington was like, is that really what you have? We're not really sure. I was just diagnosed based on symptoms. So I went through genetic testing, was re-diagnosed with medullary cystic kidney disease, which is genetic. No one in my immediate family has it. It was a surprise. I'm the only one that has kidney disease. So that changed things because I now have a 50% chance of passing this down to children. So the genetic team at the University of Washington, they're great. And they, you know, they have options as well. So if my husband and I wanted to do IVF, in vitro fertilization, they can actually go in and turn off this gene that I have. So they can make it so if we have children, they don't have the kidney disease that I have. At the time it was $10,000 about is how much it costs on top of everything
and
else.
Really expensive.
Really expensive, yeah. So it is something that they offered, and it was something for us to think about. So we talked about it because they were saying, you know, they said that if we wanted kids, we should have them now before, you know, I'm in, you know, on dialysis or anything. And then we found out that my disease was genetic. So we decided to wait. And then my husband had was diagnosed with kidney cancer. And then I had my transplant. And obviously a lot of women have children post-transplant. It's just something that you have to plan with your team. They change some of your meds and they want to keep a close eye on you. But my husband and I talked, and at this stage, so I was transplanted at 29 and I'm 34 now, we decided against kids. So, and that is just due to the fact I kind of bring a mess of genetics to the table. My husband has a mess of genetics, and I know that I can have a child post-transplant and be safe about it. There is a risk, obviously, to the transplant. You can lose your transplant, and that's not a risk that I want to take. So we've decided, you know, if we ever change our minds, we can adopt. So there's a ton of, you know, there's a ton of different routes that we can go with it. We will not have any of our own biological children. And we're happy with that decision. It took a long time for me to get to this point, though, to be accepting of that, to be happy with that. When I was told at one point that I might not be able to have children of my own. And that was really, really hard. And it took me a long time, because ever since I was little, I wanted kids. That was the goal, you know, have a family with my husband, have kids. And being told that, I couldn't even go to baby showers. I mean, it was very challenging. But we're both really happy. So we don't have kids now. And the decision that we've come to, we're really happy with, that he and I came to together. And yeah, so I will say that for fertility, it didn't, a lot of women like lose their, they stop menstruating on dialysis and all of that. That didn't happen for me. So I think it just depends. Everybody's a little bit different. And if you want to have children, just be really open and honest with that, with your doctors and your team, and let them know that that's a goal of yours, so that if that is a possibility, they can try and make that happen for you.
Yeah, and I think grandmas and grandpas, moms and dads add to that pressure sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. And for those grandmas and grandpas and moms and dads out there, listen to the person who's going through the kidney stuff. You know, and I wanted to say something too about not only fertility, but the surgeries and stuff, hair loss and all of this. This isn't just about kidneys. There's cancer patients out there that are dealing with. And there's other patients out there who are fighting through illnesses of various kinds and have a lot of the same kinds of things that go on. Medications are, we called them wonder drugs back in the day. But they keep us alive, they keep us going, they do a lot of wonderful things for us. But remember, for every blessing, sometimes there's a cursing. Oh. You know, make sure you understand both sides. And Ashley, we're getting right down to the end of it here. I want to thank you for everything, but is there anything else you would like to add? You know, the other women out there who may be listening and experiencing similar situations. Something else maybe you just thought of, or we haven't captured on a topic.
Yeah, I think that the most important thing is for other women to know that you're not alone. So I know that you can feel when you're dealing with different things, depending on what stage you're in, that there are other women out there dealing with it too. And you're not the only one. It's totally normal. I promise things are gonna get better. I've talked to a lot of women who they're kind of in the midst of it, and maybe their transplant didn't go great, or they're not adjusting to medication perfectly. They're losing hair and they're gaining weight and they feel puffy and not like themselves. And maybe they're also dealing with fertility stuff. And they've been at a place where they regret their transplant just because it's been so tough on them. And I just want to say to those women too, that your feelings are valid, that it's okay to feel that way, and that things are going to get better. And when you're in that moment, it may not seem that way, but even a year out, I was doing so much better. 5 years out, almost, I'm a completely different person. And when I look back, it was definitely all worth it. It's hard to tell in the moment because you deal with a lot. I mean, kidney failure and dialysis and then transplant. And then if you have to deal with things after transplant, I mean, it's a lot to take on. But there are other people who are going through it too. So you're not alone, and it is going to get better. I promise it is going to. So you just got to hang in there, lean on the people who you're close with, lean on your support, reach out to other people who may have gone through it too, just so that you can relate and talk about things that, you know, that they also understand. But you're going to get through it and it's going to be great, but you just got to get through the tough parts.
That's what I always say. You know, you fried bigger fish than this, mm-hmm. You, that's maybe an old Norsky saying, but you know, you've gone through other things that have been just as bad, maybe even worse, or maybe not, but you'll get through it. You'll find a way to do it. You know, and especially, I think what got me through mine helped get a lot of people through theirs. Was simply your attitude. If you think this sucks and you don't want to deal with it, it'll suck beyond belief and you'll get worse.
Mm-hmm.
If at some point in the middle of your pity party, like me, I had a pity party,
mm-hmm.
you wake up and you go, you know, I can do this. Not only can I do this, I'm going to do this. I'm going to find a way to make this work for me. So there is a way. You hold the key. You have the answer. Whether you get better or whether you get worse, oftentimes. It's all about attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Stay positive. If you need help, Ashley right here, you can reach her at mail at theroadbacktolife.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can send her an email. You can, I don't know, text her after an email. She'll make herself available. All
Definitely.
Of us do. All mm-hmm. of us do. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We just want you guys to know you're not alone. Make it through this. We're here to help you. And I've been transplanted. I'm starting my 18th year. If that's an encouragement, good. If I can do it, I'll be 74 in April. If I can do it, anybody can. Oh, and by the way, sort of like Ashley, I got scars. I got skin cancer on my face, on top of my head. Because of the medications for my transplant, I got diabetes, which is way under control. So I'm doing well. I had a heart attack. And few other things down there. So I think I'm here because, number one, good Lord's not done with me yet. And number two, I could have quit at any time and I chose not to. So from all of us, Ashley, thank you.
Thank you.
And Bob, our engineer, who has gone through the same things. And we're keeping him in darkness today. And
you know, you all talked about skin cancer. And can I add that the reason we're keeping me in darkness is because I'm being treated for it right now?
Mm-hmm.
And can I show everybody?
Show us.
All right, let me turn the light on. I'd almost, see it. I would almost say I'm proud, but it hurts. This is, yeah, the topical cream to try to control the skin cancer. So be a part of your plan, guys. Keep that sunscreen on. This is no fun. I wouldn't wish this on anybody.
No.
No. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, everybody.
This is Ashley and Dawn and the team at The Road Back to Life saying thank you for listening to The Road Back to Life with Ashley and Dawn and for allowing us to be a part of your journey. For more information on The Road Back to Life, visit us at www.theroadbacktolife.com. Also, consider subscribing to our channel so we can keep you updated with new content and videos. Remember, we're all in this together. Now go out and be kind to one another.